This podcast is a part of the Newhoff Media Podcast Network.
Back here on a Wednesday, good morning and welcome. Wednesdays mean the direct line with Wayne Kent, and he joins us this morning. Wayne, before we get to previewing tonight's show, I have to ask you, I don't know if you've seen the story, but U.S. News and World Report reports, they have this best countries report, and they've put out the list. And as a world traveler and as a citizen of so many places, I have to ask you about this. Canada is number one for the first time ever. Your three main countries, Australia at five and the United States of America at six. Do you agree, disagree, your thoughts on those categories?
I think you have to look at where I live. That based on where I live, wouldn't you choose to live where the number one is? But for those who don't know, I was born and raised in Australia to a long-standing Australian family that goes back to the 1840s, 1830s when prisoners. So we come from very low stock when prisoners populated Australia from Britain. Then we moved to Canada when I was 11. And then, long story short, I went to college in the U.S., met my wife. We worked overseas for many years, and then ended up back in the U.S. permanently in 1985. So, yeah, I've lived in both Canada, the U.S., and Australia. It's interesting to me because invariably Finland always ends up number one. So I don't know what the Finnish have done in the last few years that caused themselves to not be happy anymore, but there you go.
There you have it. Sweden is there. That's sort of close. All right. Here is the thing that they base this on. Quality of life and social purpose sub-rankings, meaning that it is a stable and safe society in which individuals can develop and prosper and is open, fair, and equitable. My problem with Canada has always been not with Canadians or not with Canada. It's just because we do so much of the heavy lifting for North America, they are able to concentrate on a lot of other things.
There's probably some truth to that, yeah. And of course, there's always this admire and complain. On the one hand, Canadians admire Americans, Americans admire Canadians. Then the other point, they complain about each other. So it's not a love-hate relationship. It's a very close relationship. And the two countries are very similar in their life approach and a lot of things. And yet, at other moments, they are very dissimilar, very unlike each other. As you mentioned, healthcare would be one of the major ones. And the Canadians have the Mounties. They wear those red suits. What could be wrong with that, right?
Yeah. If the Canadian Mounties had to take on the cartels, we're a much better partner at the border at the north than the drug czars, just south of us. And that's not to make any kind of comment on immigration or anything close to it.
No.
But you have the cartels basically running Mexico. We are a much better neighbor.
I would imagine so. I imagine that the law and order of the U.S. certainly impacts the Canadian-U.S. border dramatically. My parents live you can see the U.S. from their home, just look out their window, and that's how close to the border they live. In years past, it was common for Canadians. More Canadians live in the south. That's not because they want to be close to the U.S. That's because it's warmer in the south, and who wants to really live up north in the real bitter cold if you don't have to? I guess choose to. In years past, Canadians used to always want to shop in the U.S. because the Canadian dollar was worth more than the U.S. The present time is the reverse. What with COVID, of course, you can't go across the border at all. But so there's a close relationship. My parents know the town on the other side of the border as well as they know their own town. So there is a symbiotic relationship that's very healthy. Of course, you've got all kinds of things that, the political strife in the U.S. of recent years has drawn, the Canadians have taken the mickey out of that at times. But on the other hand, they have Trudeau, so they can't be talking they have to be careful how much they say.
Oh, all right. Yeah, he's a good-looking kid, though, I got to tell you. I'm still in my head thinking about Dudley Do-Right taking on the Sinaloa cartel in Mexico.
Don't let the cartoons impact you too much, my friend. But nonetheless,
right.
I'm sure the Canadian Mounted Rockies would not appreciate us speaking disparagingly about them because they're professional.
I'm not. Well, of course they are. They're incredible. All right. So here's the thing. What about Australia? Because they're just ahead of us on the list.
Yeah. So Australia's both. I mean, let's just say all three nations are in terms of the 100 plus nations that are around the world. We certainly enjoy a lot of things that many nations don't enjoy. We have prosperity. It may not be equitable across the board, but is that what prosperity is? I don't know. But certainly in all three nations, you can do well. Australia, the cost of living in Australia and Canada at present is extremely high. It's very hard to buy a home in both those settings in most places, both because just the land values have gone through the roof in the last two decades, primarily coming out of the British-U.S. agreement in 1999 regarding Hong Kong, that Hong Kong went back to China. And with that, the nations on the Pacific Rim who had any connection to the British Commonwealth, people were immigrating out of China or out of Hong Kong to Australia and Canada particularly. And so you, like in British Columbia, you have this law that if you don't live in your home, if you say you're actually from Hong Kong, but you don't live in your home that you own in Vancouver, there's extra taxes. And so the cost of living in Canada and Australia is impacted dramatically by that British-Chinese Accord of 1999, which we don't face so much here in the U.S. I know there's to some extent a little bit on the East Coast, but it's more difficult to immigrate to the U.S. from Hong Kong than, say, to Canada or Australia because of the British Commonwealth.
That's interesting. And before we are going to preview tonight's direct line, I promise you, but if I look at the top 10, Canada, Japan, Germany, Switzerland, Australia, United States, New Zealand, United Kingdom, Sweden, and the Netherlands, not a socialist country on this top 10 list.
No, is there any wonder? Any wonder? I mean, for crying out loud, people who are into this socialism kick of late, I want to go, have you ever been to a socialist country? And they say, well, they're not socialists, they're communists. Well, the USSR, Union of Soviet Socialist Republics, when the German Democratic Republic, okay, the East German communists, when the wall came down, it wasn't like, okay, West Germany's, or, you know, let's become communists like East Germany. No, the East Germans, as soon as they had the opportunity, man, we're leaving that lifestyle. We're leaving that political system behind. You look at places like Venezuela or Cuba, any places where socialism takes over, it's a mess. Now, you have a lot of wealth in China at present. That is, I suppose, to some extent, fed by the Western world. But try being a dissident. Try being somebody who stands for the protest sign in the square in Beijing, versus doing it in front of the White House here. You can do it in front of the White House here. You certainly can't do it in Beijing. So the people who are into all this, you know, socialism and so forth, I want to go, have you ever been there? Have you ever seen what it's really like to live? Do you know what it's like to stand in line for like 3 days to buy a toilet if they're there?
Yeah, no, we had a taste of that, right? Like early on in COVID when there was a run on the grocery stores and that's all people could do was talk about, oh my God, I can't find toilet paper. And right now that's semiconductor chips and ketchup for whatever reason. But, you know, we had just a little taste of that and people lost their minds.
Well, I remember standing in line in Moscow and in Leningrad, what St. Petersburg now, for toilet paper. You stood in line. And ironically, when we were standing in line outside Walmart back in, you know, April of last year, I said to Leslie, my wife, I said, this feels like we're living in the Soviet Union again, which was kind of somewhat ironic. On the one side, comedic, and they go, we're doing this in the U.S. of all things. I'm thinking, well, this will soon come to an end, and surely it did. But it was just the way, it's probably still the way of life in a number of different settings. It certainly is the way of life in Cuba and Venezuela and a number of socialist countries. To this day, you stand in line. You don't get to touch the product. It's behind a glass case because there's only certain numbers of rolls of toilet paper. So you stand in line to get to a glass counter so that a woman or a man can pass you a roll of toilet paper. That's why when they say they have full employment, they got full employment because everything is, it's just ridiculous. Don't get me going,
well,
Brian.
But people, you know, like Michael Moore talk about the healthcare system, you know, in places like Venezuela or Cuba. And now they're trying to trade oil for vaccines because they can't even afford to vaccinate their citizens. There is an interesting take on all of that. We need to have you on for longer, Wayne. I apologize. Why don't we start doing this like right out of the chute at 6 o'clock?
Oh, gee, grand. Repartee with Brian Byers at 6 o'clock in the morning.
whoa. We don't have to.
Brian, you and I are dear friends, but we do at times get into it, don't we?
I guess that depends on your definition. I never see
Let me rephrase that. I'm up for whatever you need and whatever you think would help our audience. By all means, when I say our audience, the audience of Newhoff Media, because in all honesty, Brian, I'm fully aware that when we came to you with this crazy idea of doing religion on the radio on a secular station, sort of a quasi-religious show, you were all for it. And I'm always glad that you made that decision. along with Joel Fletcher, and off we are. Here it is 15 years later. As you know, I thought we might last 6 weeks.
Yeah, well, we're glad to have you back. You know, the last year was a challenge for everyone, and voices are important, and difference of opinion is important. I just thought you were really qualified, having spent time in many of these countries, to talk about these lists. And these lists are silly, by the way. There's no accounting. I mean, I could take one person, in Decatur, Illinois, and they're living their best life. And I could take another person in Decatur, Illinois, whose life is a constant struggle. So I don't know how you define what a happy place is.
I think that's part of the issue. Is you've got to say isn't it based on our family and our job
everything.
Satisfaction and probably our health too. I mean, talk about health situations. And there is a problem in Canada with it's all free. But when my mother needed a back surgery, she waited 2.5 years to have that back surgery, and I'm quite convinced it impaired her permanently. Not so much in her back, but the amount of pain that she suffered for those 2.5 years waiting. Here in the U.S., you would have been under a surgeon's knife within about 4 weeks. That pain impacted her so much so that I don't know that she's even passed it here some 5 years later. That's my view looking in as the son.
All right, let's talk about tonight's show. 5 o'clock, The Direct Line. What are we going to listen to?
Yes, Drew Engle will be with us. Drew grew up here in town, the son of a Caterpillar exec. He's 27 years of age. I've known Drew since he was early teens. Went off to school, got married, and has come out with a book about pride over passion. Namely, when people say, "Hey, as long as you've got a job you like, you're going to do well." And his contention is that's not really the case. It's not necessarily for your passion. You'll never work a day in your life. That sort of idea, but more so, is there also not just passion, but what are the things that you can take pride in as well? And so we'll visit with him. He's 27 years old. First book out of the chute here. 5 Rules to Career Satisfaction. He was laid off or furloughed during COVID. Works for a Fortune 500 company. Thought, well, what can I do during this next 6 to 8 months? And he wrote a book. So I'm quite interested to hear. But he lives in Minnesota now, I think, or Wisconsin. But nonetheless, we'll see what he's got to say about how you maneuver and how you wind your way through a career. In careers are legitimately so different than they were 30 years ago. For a young person starting out in their 20s now, the number of job changes they're going to have versus somebody, the job changes I might have experienced when I was 20 years old, in the late 70s. It is such a different world. We're hoping to give some advice in that regard.
Yeah, that sounds fascinating. I was just looking at the book on Amazon. I think I'll buy it and read it. Love when local kids do good. And it's very similar to Mike Rowe's message. Find a career and then find the passion in that career rather than the other way around.
Exactly. So, I was quite stunned. I got this blurb from Drew's press agent and said, "Hey, would you guys consider this guy on Direct Line?" I know him. cool story. And young guys got married and got a little girl, and local making doing well, if you will. So it's good stuff.
I love it.
I mean, so we'll take
absolutely
that on. Ellen Momer from Blue Mountain will be with us. She's always a little bit has some ideas on this, that, and the other. We'll take it all on and see what we can do from 5 to 6 o'clock tonight on Wednesday.
Looking forward to it, Wayne. And if you can't be there live, you can always listen to the podcast at nowdecatur.com.
You've been listening to the Newhoff Media Podcast Network. For more, visit newhoffmedia.com.